Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's Pets and Vets for the month, and here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell, an extensive background in conventional veterinary medicine and some of the newer techniques as well. Dr. Scharf, welcome back to the show. Nice to have you here.
Thank you so much, Ray. It's great to be back.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Always best on Pets and Vets to get in line early. The lines tend to fill up pretty quickly. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment on our wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can also tweet your questions and comments. Go to WAMC Radio and then hashtag it Vox Pop. So WAMC Radio, hashtag Vox Pop on Twitter. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. If you are doing that and not calling in, try to provide as much info as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, especially if you are submitting a question online. But again, the number 1-800-348-2551. What's new, Ron? How nice to have you back.
It is so great to be back, Ray, and I was just thinking recently that when I started on the show, it was 10 years ago, it was 2005.
Wow.
And I just can't believe that it's been so long. It's amazing.
Well, you do a good service here. We have a question already via email. This was sent to us at about 1:15. This is from Winnie, who says she'll be unavailable during the show but plans on listening online. So here's Winnie's question. Our 7-year-old cat has been diagnosed with hyperthyroidism. Our vet tells us there is a one-time procedure, (radiation?), that will cure this problem once and for all. It's very expensive, but then again, the medication needed to keep him in health is very expensive. Can you explain this procedure along with any drawbacks?
I could definitely explain it. The radiation is a one-time treatment. They get a single dose of a radioactive iodine isotope, and poop and pee are put in bags for several days at a place that does that, and then they go home and they're done. And it's got a very high success rate, and it is very pricey. The typical cat that gets diagnosed with hyperthyroidism is usually older, maybe twice as old as 7. So if they're 14 or 15, the medication over the course of the remaining years that they have makes it an economically sensible thing to go with a medication. But if they're only 7, then 7 to 9 more years of life potentially is going to add up to way more medication by a lot compared to the amount that the radiation would cost. So radiation at 7 years of age is definitely a good idea.
All right, let's go to the phones and Kathy and Troy. Kathy, you're on.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very good. And Dr. Scharf, good to talk to you as well.
Likewise, Kathy.
All right. I have a cat with a litter box problem.
Uh-oh.
And just quick background, she's a female. I adopted her in June. She was a stray, so I don't have a lot of background information on her. She's been spayed. She has her shots, and the vet estimates, of course, he can't tell for sure, but he estimates she's probably 2 years old or thereabouts, so she's a young animal. And it seems like she's having incomplete bowel movements in the litter box. She uses the litter box fine for both urine and bowel movements. She covers everything up very meticulously. And it seems to be happening more and more. There seems to be a leftover piece of poop that seems to get stuck in her rectum. And I find a small, maybe 1/2 inch to 3/4 inch gift deposited various places in the house. And it doesn't look like she's constipated. When I find it, it's malleable. It's not like it's a heavy chunk like she had been, you know, really straining. It looked very normal. And I'm wondering if the doctor has any ideas.
Yes. Kathy, my first guess would be that there is something in there, whether it's a lot of fur or if it's some other object, some cotton, some fabric, that is inside. So if you take that, put some gloves on, and you pull it apart, I would bet that you'd see either a ton of hair in there, or some other string-like object, you know, yarn or who knows what. Because if that cat is over-grooming or ingesting some yarn or thread, which, by the way, could be very dangerous, then I could see that one poop is not able to get completely out. So
you know,
I would look at it, literally feel it.
That makes a great deal of sense. She's long-haired, and over the about in the same time frame when this all started, she started grooming excessively, getting rid of her fur, her winter coat.
So she might have a stress situation, too. If there's over-grooming, sometimes there's something behind that, but it could be seasonal, like you're saying.
Yeah, I've just seen a large amount of, you know, fur in the house, but I know that she's just shedding to beat the band.
So, Kathy, see if you can help her out by grooming her as often as she'll let you, as often as you can.
Okay.
And then maybe if you need to give her a lubricating type substance, like Lacitone is an example of something that you would use for a cat that's got a little constipation.
Okay.
But, you know, it might just help lubricate it. You don't have to use the full dose that you would use for a constipated cat. But it's also good for hairballs, you know, for cats that get hairballs. So,
Would you give me the name of that?
Sure. There are many different kinds, Kathy. It's not like one, you know, good product's got a corner on the market, but the one that I've had the most experience with is Lacitone, Laxatone.
All right.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
Sure thing.
Kathy, thanks a lot. We
good
kicked
luck,
off the
Kathy.
Show with a poop question. If you're eating a late lunch, I apologize for the graphic nature of that one. Let's go to...
And you predicted that, right?
I did predict it via email this morning. Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're
Hi, Ray. Yes, and Dr. Sharp.
Hi, Lynn.
I went to vet today with my three cats, but one of them is a 13-year-old male, and he's been recently wormed. He is acting kind of old. He's not drinking too much water. His temperature was a little bit below normal, and he's about 9 pounds. Appetite varies. Sometimes it seems like he eats part of his meal at night. Otherwise, he's got open meals of dry food every day. I'm not sure what to make of it. Is he getting old?
Well, I don't know how he's acting old other than that his temperature is low and he's not drinking that much, Lynn.
He's actually lethargic.
Lethargic.
And he's not grooming as well as he was.
Ah.
And his temperature was below...
Okay. Okay. So let me ask you a few things. Are you sure, Lynn, that he's 13 years old?
Yes. I got him when he was like 6 weeks old. So.
Well, that's not old enough to be old. I mean, in my mind, older, but they shouldn't start looking their age, so to speak, by slowing down and getting bony kind of thing until they're at least a year or two older than that. So you might be right. There might be something going on. Were any blood tests done?
No, I can afford them, but I know that he's had problems in the past with his jaundice kind of thing.
Oh, okay,
yes,
so we might have something. You can get cats, Lynn, that can have these chronic smoldering problems. Either it's an intestinal issue like an inflammatory bowel disease, or it could be a low-grade chronic pancreatitis, and it's not dramatic enough to really grab your attention, but then over the course of many months, you look at them and they look either too skinny or unkempt.
Many years, I think, maybe.
Many what?
Many years, you think?
It's not out of the question. I mean, it could also just be parasites, though, you know, if you went to the vet, I would imagine that they would have checked the poop for parasites. It's a good thing to do at least once a year.
I wormed them like 3 weeks ago.
Well, some of the wormers are good. If it's an over-the-counter, it's not...
Veterinarian's wormer.
Well, that's better, but even then, no one medication, Lynn, takes care of all possible parasites.
Cool.
Well, some people appear older than other people.
Absolutely.
I mean, does the cat smoke, Lynn?
Yeah. Or drink?
Nobody drinks.
Okay. Oh, he drinks. Okay.
Speaking of drinking, you said he doesn't drink a lot. Does he get canned food?
I'm teasing with Ray.
I know. Does he eat canned food?
We give him canned food one time a day at night, so we can bring them in at night. But otherwise, they got free dry food all day long.
So the cat that gets canned food, or a dog for that matter, is not going to drink as much because they're getting a lot of that water from the canned food. Okay.
No, I think one time a day, a third of a can at night.
Okay.
Well,
it might be something and it might not be something, Lynn. I mean, nine pounds doesn't sound bad, but I don't know how much you weighed a year ago. So
same thing. He weighed the same thing a year ago.
Okay.
I would.
But he's getting stiff in the arse end. He's getting a little stiff back there, but he still hunts. He caught a red squirrel the other day.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay.
Bad news for the squirrel.
There might be something going on. Hard to say without the blood work, though.
All right, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. But the overall question I had, some adults at 60 look much older than what, you 60?
I just turned. Yeah.
You turned 60?
Just last week.
Good heavens, I'm only 50 and you look younger than me. There again, it's a hard life in the radio biz. All right, let's take a break here. Ron Scharf is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Back with a Pets and Vets edition coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Hubbard Hall Center for the Arts and Education, Cambridge, New York, presenting Molière's comedy Tartuffe, weekends February 20th through March 15th, hubbardhall.org. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. And Adirondack Sports and Fitness Summer Expo, a Capital Region run, hike, bike, paddle, triathlon, and healthy living show with 125 exhibitors and more, March 7th and 8th at the Saratoga City Center, adksports.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's 1-800-348-2551, Vox Pop, Pets and Vets. You can also tweet us at WAMC Radio, hashtag Vox Pop, if you want to weigh in. And back to the phones we go. Kimberly in Kingston. Kimberly, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Hi,
thank you for taking my call.
Nice to have
you. I just have a quick question. I have an adorable little pooch who has a white face, and soon he's a puppy still, but... soon after I got him, he started to develop the pet stains that go down the eyes, down on the face,
yes,
underneath the tear ducts. And I went on, I don't know if I can say these things, but I went on PetSmart's line, and they had a product called Angel Eyes. And I used it, and it worked, and it was great. And then I just Googled Angel Eyes to renew it, and I read all these terrible things about how toxic it is to dogs and cats. So I was wondering, A, do you know if that's a safe product or not, and B, do you have any solutions?
So, Kimberly, it's a common thing in these white dogs, the poodles, the Bichons,
right,
that kind of thing, and I've seen it a lot, and a lot of people get bothered by, especially people on the show ring, and do use a lot of the remedies. The problem with a lot of the remedies, though, is that a lot of them contain an antibiotic, something like a tetracycline thing, and I don't think that it's a good idea to use antibiotics indiscriminately for cosmetic purposes, because that's basically a cosmetic problem. Now, there's a small chance that it could be, Kimberly, a plugged tear duct, and that could be flushed out, okay? Usually the dog's got to be a little sedated or anesthetized when you cannulate
a
tear duct.
Well, it's on both sides, and it disappeared on both sides when I used the product, and it came
back. Oh, well, then that does suggest...
Yeah.
So I would try to...
any healthy alternative?
Personally, I would take a damp cotton ball to the dog's eyes once or twice a day, every day. Because what's happening is that there is a pigment in the tears, Kimberly. There's a pigment in tears, just like there's a pigment in saliva. So a white dog, say, that licks his or her paws a lot, I could tell immediately because it's got this rust color.
Mm.
So it's a similar thing with the tears. There's a pigment in there, believe it or not, even though it looks like water. And then after day after day after day, having those tears overflow and go down the nose instead of down the tear duct, you'll see that. So if you wash it on a daily basis, that's one cheap, simple, non-toxic way to take care of it. Doesn't cost you anything, and there's no downside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. All right. right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks,
you're
Kimberly.
Welcome.
Thank you.
But again, this is just a cosmetic issue, and
yes.
The dog is not in any way harmed by having stains around the eyes.
That is the case 95% of the time. Sometimes there could be a problem going on, whether it's a plugged tear duct or something else, but the vast majority of the time, it's just that those tears are overflowing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the dog's anatomy. Some dogs have more prominent eyes. Their globes are bigger. Got these bulgy eyes. So it depends on the situation, but poodles and Bichons don't have bulgy eyes, and they get it more than any other breed. So I don't know why.
Okay, but is it a common thing to have tear ducts on both sides plugged,
no.
Or is that very rare?
Unlikely.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Ray in Shacksburg, Mass., you're on.
Hi, it's Shutesbury, but that's close enough.
It says Shacksburg, but,
I don't know where that is.
That's all right. Well, welcome, Shacksburg. You're on.
Hi, Doc, a question. I just got this beautiful 6-month-old Shepherd mix. He's 90% Shepherd and got a little Siberian Husky in him. So one eyeball is blue, and one eyeball is like 1/3 blue and 2/3 brown. Now, is there any vision impairment with an eyeball that's two different colors like that?
Unlikely, Ray. I grew up, my entire boyhood was spent, a kid across the street from me had the same exact thing. One eye was one color, and the other eye was half one color and half the other color.
Wow.
You're saying
right.
1/3 and 2/3. Genetics is amazing. Sometimes the blue, Ray, is the lack of pigment. Believe it or not, it's like an albino dog will have blue eyes. And if you look with an ophthalmoscope into the eye, the retina is going to look different because of the lack of pigment. And if it's one of the first times you're looking with an ophthalmoscope into the retina of a dog's eye, you kind of get scared for a second because it looks awful because it's not the normal pretty background, yellow-green kind of background. It's this bright red-orange kind of background. I don't think that there's anything to worry about. How to explain it? Take a genetics course and
it's
then
a
take
mutation.
A few more. It, I guess, I don't know if you can go so far as to call it a mutation, Ray. It is genetic, but it's just how the cards get shuffled.
Yeah.
More than, I don't think it's a mutation. I could be wrong.
I don't know. Yeah. Just throwing it out there.
No, it's just complicated genetics.
Okay.
Yeah. And one other quick thing. Very smart dog. He's, without little training, he's learned a lot of commands. But there's one habit he has that I had a purebred shepherd years ago. I didn't do that. And I've had a husky, too, and never did that. But he will not stop. Mind you, he's only 6 months, but he's 55 pounds already. And so what he does is when he approaches a person, he likes to jump up and put his two paws on your shoulder and start licking your face.
Wow.
And we cannot get him to stop doing that.
Okay.
Everybody, child, adult. Right up on the shoulders.
He's got a bad habit, but there's something you could do about it because it would have been much more difficult if he was still doing it at 2 years or 5 years of age.
Right,
It's much easier when they're tiny to prevent them from jumping up, but a lot of people don't because it's so cute, because they're small.
Yeah.
It's not threatening.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone thinks, he loves me. We're going to have a special bond. We're going to have a great friendship here, and they encourage it. They give it a lot of positive reinforcement.
Mm.
So what I tell people, everyone that comes in with a puppy especially, I recommend to them, do not let the dog jump up because it can get old fast. And the way that you don't let them jump up is that you do not give them anything good in return for that behavior, meaning you don't pay attention to them, you don't look at them, you don't touch them. If everyone that dog does that to immediately shuts down and doesn't look at them, doesn't interact with them, doesn't do anything that would be something a dog or a puppy would like, then eventually that behavior will be extinguished. It'll go away. It'll take several months to do it. But if you have everyone in the same boat doing that kind of response, I call it looking for rain. What I do is I cross my hands over my chest and I look up. And that's all I do, and I just don't say anything. I don't look at the dog, and eventually the dog will see I'm not getting anything good for that.
How long will that take?
It'll take months. At a 6-month, even if you start the dog at 2 months of age, training them like that, they'll still keep on jumping up to at least six or 8 months of age.
So you have a
if you're starting at six, you're looking at a good half a year or three quarters of a year to get that out of his system. If he's getting a consistent response from everyone, you can't have any mixed signals, Ray, because if nine people are doing the right thing and then one person
right,
is
you're back
saying,
to square one.
Good boy.
Yeah, it's
really tough.
Yeah, we only had him for a month, so.
Oh, you could do something about that. You just have to be.
Yeah, and we tried turning around, and then he'll just jump on your back
if
you turn.
Yeah, I would just not even move.
Look in the back of your head, so it's like it's going to be. Yeah, this is just one habit.
Well, what you also want to do, Ray, is you want to give him good behaviors that he know he'll be rewarded for. So that could be obedient things like lay down. It could be. You know, so that's a way to distract him so that he'll know he'll get a treat and a lot of fuss made over him in a good way if he does what he's told, whether it's a sit or a downstay or whatever. So that way you can get it from the positive reinforcement side of it. So he has something to look forward to instead of having nothing to look forward
to. All right. Hey, Ray, thanks a lot. We got to move on here.
Yep. Bye.
I appreciate the call. Over to Mike in Cornwall. Mike, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Doctor, and hi.
Hi, Mike.
Great. I'm calling you about a litter of cats we had adopted back in 99. We've lost two of them. Five of them are 16. We've dealt with the hyperthyroid, which the pill has worked well. The veterinarian is also using, and they have some kidney problems, epicytin and azadril.
Yes.
Those pills. And then my wife hydrates them every day.
Cool.
Which I think is prolonged there.
Absolutely.
Is that a good thing, that hydration?
Absolutely. The kidneys love that. They love that, Mike. And that's what gets way more mileage out of the typical cat chronic kidney disease, which is the most common thing that's going to affect a cat that age. That's the single biggest, most helpful thing you could do other than dietary manipulation. If you give them diets that are limited in protein to an amount that's enough for good health, but no more so, then you're not making those failing kidneys work overtime. And most of the foods over the counter do have more protein than a cat needs. It's a marketing thing. Look at all the protein we have. And that's fine if the kidneys are functioning well. But those cats' kidneys are not functioning well, the fluids are a great thing to do. I applaud your wife's efforts.
Great job.
Okay. Thank you ever so much.
Mike, thank you very much. The number to call here on Vox Pop is 1-800-348-2551. It's Kerry's turn. Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. You're on.
Hi, guys. My question has nothing to do about cats or dogs.
Uh-oh.
However, it's about horses and steers.
Oh, boy. Well, do you do that sort of thing, Ron? No?
Nope.
Well, let's give it a stab anyway.
Listen.
Well, I was wondering, I've never been to a rodeo, but I've seen them on TV. And what, if anything, is done to, you know, the horses or the steers to make them jump and buck like they do?
Well, I am not responding as an expert in it. I am not a large animal person in general, horses nor cows.
Do you ride rodeo, Ron?
I've not ridden rodeo.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, fine.
But those broncos, you know, when they're young, they're pretty feisty, and if they're not broken, if they have not been gotten used to, whatever verb form that is, being ridden by a person, they're going to put a lot of effort into not being ridden by a person. So it's a contest, obviously. It's very dangerous in my mind. What do they do about it? I don't know, to tell you the truth, Kerry, of what they do to those steers or horses, if they do anything to make them even more reactive, I doubt. I think it's just in their nature to not want someone on their back, to not want another species on their back.
I heard horror shows one time what they've done.
Yeah, well, let's not go into those.
I'm sure there's bad stuff.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I hear you. And you know what? I think maybe it's best to move on.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, guys.
Hey, all right, Karen.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah, that could go to a dangerous place. Lois and Latham. Lois, you're on.
Hi. I have a 15-month-old female Newfoundland, and she's been just a sweetheart so far. But lately, she's just been, I don't want to say bipolar, where she can be really sweet and calm one moment, and then she just kind of has an insane period where she's not behaving and, like, pouncing on me and... I was just wondering, is this like an adolescent behavior? Will it? She is going to obedience school, and she does well in her classes. I was just wondering if, you know, this is just, you know, a teenage period or something.
I think it's very possible, Lois, that it could be that, because that is kind of an age in between adulthood and baby and juvenile, and there is a lot of that kind of thing in adolescence. And one thing, the big thing that I would want to know, Lois, is does she get enough exercise?
Well, since it's been really cold, you know, we have been going on walks, you know, fairly consistently, and she's been kind of inside more than we have been because of the weather. So I guess that could explain
that. That could be a big factor. She's cooped up. She's climbing the walls. I mean, many of us have cabin fever at this point of the year.
Yeah.
And I think at that age, that's a dog that wants to exert itself and wants to, you know, get out. And I'll tell you, you know, this weather, I don't think ought to bother her. This weather or snow is probably just the thing that she wants. And maybe she's frustrated that not only is she not getting enough activity, but look at all that great white stuff out there that she could be having fun with. Yeah, try to get her out there as much as you can, Lois.
Okay. One other brief question. I'm feeding her a raw diet of, you know, raw meaty bones and some tripe and some, like, mixed preparations of raw food. Do you have any feeling about that? I mean, some people say that it's just a fad and, you know, other people swear by it.
I have very strong feelings about that, Lois. I'm strongly mixed feelings. Okay? Because I've seen, you know, coming out of vet school in the first 5 years of my career, which is almost 30 years
Yikes.
Ago that I've been practicing.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Well, way to go.
In the first five or so years, Lois, I would be kind of aghast when people would say they're feeding raw food to their animals. And I'm saying, how could you do that? Aren't you afraid of food poisoning? They could die from food poisoning, etc.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, over the last 20-odd years, I've seen more and more animals on the raw food diet, and in my personal experience, have not seen any fatalities from food poisoning. Now, that's just my experience. Food poisoning exists. It does get animals sick. It can't get them dead. So it's not that it doesn't happen. It's that given all the animals that have been on the raw diet, I'm surprised that I haven't seen more sick ones. My suspicion, Lois, is that if you start someone early but not too early, that they're not too young to have an underdeveloped immune system, but they're not too old to have gotten stuck in their old, you know, commercially processed food ways, that it might. And if you do it gradually, I know that a lot of people that do it, they start with chicken necks, you know, and then if you want to hedge. If you want to hedge your bets, what I tell people to do, and this will lessen the danger appreciably, is to flash the food in the oven at a high temperature for 5 minutes. Because in the majority of the really dangerous bacteria are superficial. They're on the surface. And if you flash it so that the outside is kind of charred and the inside is not, it's what I would do if I were to feed my animals that. I have been tempted many times to try my own animals, and I chickened out every time because my kids, my wife would have killed me if I got the dog sick. My clients would have said, how could you have done this to your own animal? And so I've been too
my
chicken.
Kids call it
fear factor, exactly,
exactly.
So I can only say good luck to you. I see a lot of dogs and cats on raw food that look great. Their teeth look great. So, you know, they say the uncooked bones are less brittle, so they're less likely to crack and hurt the animal and perforate the intestine. So good luck to you.
Thanks, Lois. We appreciate the call. Okay, so you haven't seen a lot of sick animals, but in general, have you noticed that those on a raw diet are in much better health?
In some cases, I have noticed that. I do think that many of them are not all of them. A lot of them, you know, have their own problems because the diet does not explain all of our health picture. I mean, there's genetics, there's your environment, there are a million other things coming into play, but the diet's a big one. And I do think that a lot of them look real good. A lot of people say to you, well, you know, dogs don't eat cooked food or canids don't eat cooked food in the wild and they do fine. Well, no. How do you know they're not getting sick? How do you know they're not dying?
That's a good point.
Okay. that happens in the wild, too. Just because they're in the wild doesn't mean they're totally healthy and live a long life. It's not the case.
Well, that's a good point. And before we take a break here, I'll go through a couple of emails, or at least one here. There's a follow-up. Now, the first question of the program was from Winnie, who talked about hyperthyroidism and the radiation, the one-time radiation procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill in Westchester says, I strongly recommend that anyone considering the thyroid procedure obtain a money-back guarantee before going ahead. I've never heard of such a thing.
No such thing in medicine.
Okay. He said that he had the thyroid radiation procedure done in Westchester. It did not work at all.
My understanding is that it's got at least a 90% success rate.
Okay. And so what could cause it to fail?
They didn't get enough radiation, and the thing kept on growing. The hyperthyroidism is it's a tumor. It's an adenoma. It's usually a benign tumor, and the thyroid tissue grows, and the radiation destroys an amount of thyroid tissue that is usually enough to put them into the normal range. Look, sometimes it could be too much, and they're hypothyroid.
Yeah.
That's an easy thing to address,
but
though.
That's also medication for life, right?
Yes, but it's an easy... If you're going to have one endocrine problem... hypothyroidism is the one to have. I mean, it's so easily managed and so uncomplicated and so undangerous, or safe, I guess, would be the real word instead of undangerous, that hypothyroidism, which is what dogs get, is the best endocrinopathy to have.
All right, let's take a break. Ron Scharf is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It is Pets and Vets, and we hit the home stretch next.
Support for WAMC comes from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, InterimHealthcare.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, reopening on March 1st with activities for children and adults, featuring two new exhibitions, From House Pets to Endangered Species and The Artist Revealed, ArkellMuseum.org. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets is the topic. Ron Scharf is our guest. Ron, here's another one from email. This is from Phyllis. I adopted a 13-year-old male cat from a friend who was dying of cancer. Over several years, she had persuaded him, a feral cat, to live under the deck of her house, then in her garage, and then in her laundry room. She had the cat altered, and ever since she brought it indoors, it has been gentle and good-natured. I've had the cat for 2.5 years. About a year ago, one of its eyes became glazed over, and I took him to a veterinary ophthalmologist who diagnosed a subluxated lens. Ideally, I would give the cat eye drops to prevent glaucoma, but the cat won't let me do that. The ophthalmologist recommended a small dose of prednisone, half of a 5-milligram tablet, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and that's been the regimen for about a year. For the past few months, geez, a long letter, Phyllis. For the past few months, the cat has acted disoriented sometimes, yowling if he doesn't know where I am, and sometimes walking past his dish as if he can't smell his food. When I'm in the kitchen, he stays right at my feet, and I have to be careful not to step on him. Is it possible he's senile or suffers from brain damage, which might account for the subluxated lens and also for his confusion? Again, a 13-year-old cat. Is it possible for a 13-year-old cat to be senile?
It's possible for a 13-year-old cat to be senile, but it's not likely. Okay. It's not like a great many... there are a good many cats that can get senile, but it's usually a little older, 15, 16, 17, that kind of thing. I would be more inclined to think that the other eye is going, because if it's walking past its food dish, that tells me that it's more of a vision thing than a mentation thing.
But wouldn't you smell the food?
Yeah, that's true. You would. But usually you're going to see other cognitive changes with senility. You're going to see animals that get lost in corners, animals that are just doing things that they never used to do. And it's possible, but it wouldn't be my first thing to rule out.
So what would Phyllis do first, then?
get the eyes right checked.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough. All right. Back to the phones we go. And Lisa in Hurley. Lisa.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a three-year-old. Well, when I adopted him, he was 3 months. They said that he was a mastiff mix. So as he grew into his looks, it looks like, and I've been told he's more of a boxer mix with a pit bull. Anyways, I've had him for 3 years, and I've noticed as he's gotten older, his hip will pop out of place. His back leg will pop out of place. And I've taken him to the vet, and they said that it looks like he may have a form of hip dysplasia. And as he gets older, he's about 67 pounds right now, so he's kind of a big boy. And I wanted to know, as he gets older, I'm sure this is going to be a problem, is it okay to give him any kind of supplements, you know, bone supplements or anything like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Lisa.
Okay.
The supplements are best if they have arthritis. If they do not yet have arthritis, then the supplements are not going to help as much. But a lot of animals with arthritis do get benefit from, I'll give you a few examples. One of them is the glucosamine chondroitin sulfate type medication. And there are some proprietary names, which I tend to trust more than the products around town, because
okay.
there is a wide variety and quality around town. As a matter of fact, I just read today about our attorney general in New York State is looking at a lot of these supplements and claiming that there's nothing in it that ought to be in it. So I would go with a name brand company is all I'm saying. With a for the glucose, the one that I use is Dasuquin, D-A-S-U-Q-U-I-N.
Okay.
I stand by that company. They've been around. They have a reputation to uphold. And that's number one. Number two, there is an injectable called Adequin, A-D-E-Q-U-A-N, which is given twice a week for 4 weeks, which is also very good. It's like turbocharged glucosamine chondroitin sulfate.
Okay.
Could you get too much? Could you take too much?
You can have too much of anything.
Yeah.
I do think that the injectable one called Adequin, I've heard, can cause bleeding disorders. I've never seen it or experienced it in any of my patients. And I have seen animals that have been on it chronically, but it's not the kind of thing that you give every day.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe they're on it once or twice a month kind of thing.
Okay.
So at that level, no, I haven't seen any
problems. All right, Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. Here's an email quickly from Jeff. Are Jack Russells typically unintelligent dogs, or do they have an inbreeding problem with breeders more than other canines? I've known a few people who've owned them, and they tend to die in ridiculous ways pretty regularly, attacking bears, drowning in a pool, trapping themselves in a hole in the ground, even swallowing toys the size of a softball. One person I know has had four that have died in such a manner, and he was vigilant about keeping track of them. So are Jack Russells just not all that bright?
I don't know, Jeff, if we could call it a case of intelligence, because I think that all the breeds are bred to do different things. And the Jack Russell is a classic breed that people get unprepared. They don't know what the breed needs. They don't know what motivates the breed. They don't know how high an energy level it is. So my suspicion would be a lot of these Jack Russells that Jeff has heard of, his friends having who have had untimely ends or problems, are not getting the exercise and direction that they need from their owners. I think that unless you are really aware and okay with giving them the kind of life that they need, then you're in for trouble with a Jack Russell.
Okay,
absolutely.
But I mean, lack of exercise, and then the next logical step is attack a bear?
They do tend to be feisty.
Okay, all right, back to the phones. Deborah in Kingston. Deborah, you're on.
Hi, Doctor. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
I'm actually calling on behalf of a good friend of mine. She can't call right now. She has a 10-year-old male pug, and he basically, she takes him out. She can get him to go out. She carries him down the stairs, and he won't either urinate or defecate when it's really cold out. And even though she has him, he's standing there. He basically refuses to go, and then she eventually takes him upstairs, and then he usually goes in the house. Sometimes he doesn't go even in the house for over a day. And then as soon as it warms up a little bit, he's fine. Her vet says that it's a matter of the weather, but do you have any suggestions?
It's funny you should ask, Deborah, because just yesterday I did a dental cleaning, a prophylaxis on a Jack Russell. Chihuahua-type breed who has the same exact problem as what you're mentioning. This dog is even more so. He's a kind of a dramatic guy. He's got a very dramatic personality. But he would not only go out, but he would freeze and fall over before he did his business.
Wow.
It dramatic. And I just spoke to his mom at length about that yesterday. I spoke to her right before the show about how he's doing since his procedure. And what I recommend to her is what I'm going to recommend to your friend, Deborah. Number one, that use booties. Now, the booties are things that they have a reinforced bottom, and they have more like a nylon top, and you fasten them on with Velcro, and the dog hates it at first, and they move as if they got this hyperspasticity to their muscles because they're not used to it. But if you persist and you make them get used to it, then they will walk in them as if they're normal, and that way you could at least provide some protection against the cold, number one. Number two, if they are so stubborn that they refuse to get used to it or don't let you get the booties on, then I would just take a double layer of wool socks and put a plastic bag like a freezer storage bag over it and see if that'll be better for when they go outside. Okay?
Okay.
And if that doesn't do it, then the next thing I would think about is paper training them. You know, small dogs, train to the house.
She has done that. Is it possible to do that? She got pads, but he doesn't go. How do you paper train a 10-year-old dog?
Well, Deborah, if he's not going outside, he's got to be going inside, okay?
He is.
And if he's going inside, then can you teach an old dog new tricks is basically what that comes down
right.
to. I think that what you do is you try to reward them for going on the papers, and you try to catch every infraction and give them a convincing deterrent as far as yelling and raising your voice and acting in a way that's obviously unhappy to the dog. And eventually, hopefully, if the dog can get the message that, you know, if I do it anywhere, I get a lot of flack and mom's not happy. But if I do it on these papers, I get treats, I get biscuits, I get, meatballs or whatever. Eventually, you might be able to retrain that dog to go in the house on the papers.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
Good
Thanks
luck.
A lot for the call. Dogs seem like a lot of work.
Dogs are a lot
Why
of work.
Why bother?
More than cats, but cats are demanding too. Someone told me of a new product yesterday, something like an aqua, like an AstroTurf kind of product.
Yeah.
That you train the dog to go on, and then it's much easier to clean. You know,
I see.
It'll just you can
Hose
either
it
remove
off.
The solid, or you could wash off the urine,
yeah.
And might be easier than if you could do that than using papers.
It's more than I need to know. Roger in Gloversville. Roger, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling for my girlfriend who has a 12-year-old parakeet. During the winter, periodically gets respiratory distress.
Oh, boy.
And we got some regular doxycycline. It just took a little bit of it, put it in his water, and that seems to help him. We have it's a very inaccurate way of doing a dosage. Is there any powder that we can buy without seeing a vet? To give it to him himself. Oh, yeah, and once he gets the doxycycline, in a day and a half, he's back to his normal chipper self.
A day? Wow.
I mean, he's a happy bird.
Okay, so you don't really deal with birds that often, but as a general question,
I'm sorry, your name is Roger?
Yes.
Okay, I would not feel comfortable as a veterinarian advising someone to use medicine, antibiotics, on their
right.
own, because even if I knew about birds, which plenty of my colleagues know plenty more than I do, I just don't think it's a responsible way to do it. I don't know that it's in the animals, the bird's best interest.
I wasn't trying to put you in a bad spot. The problem is, there's very few vets in the Capital District that deal with birds.
Oh, not true. I have colleagues that deal with birds.
Right.
Absolutely.
They only see they're there one day a week.
Oh, I see. The bird specialists are on banker's hours?
Right.
No?
And the other piece of it is, this is the winter. When you take a bird that's used to being indoors, even if you cover up their cage, they're going to get a chill. And she's gone, taken previous birds to vets and has found that they get worse because they were outside.
Well, that's true. That is a risk.
You do it and if you don't. But let me rephrase my question. Where is there a understanding that this is at our own risk, no medical advice whatsoever, if we wanted to get powdered or doxycycline in a form that we can better dole it out?
Yes, you can. It does come in a powder form. Usually the powder is in a gel capsule. But it does come in a powder form. But one of the problems, Roger, is that if you're only treating for a day or two, you're selecting for a bacterial population that's going to be resistant to that antibiotic. That's one of the problems.
We give it for 5 days, just like with a human being. They say, take the antibiotic for 5 to 7 days or 7 to 10 days. We don't just give it 1 day and call it over.
I would wonder why it keeps coming back if that's the case. Shit. I think it's being undertreated, and you're selecting for an antibiotic resistance is my only advice that I can give you, Roger.
Okay. Well, Roger, thanks a lot. You know, it's a tough question. But obviously antibiotics, you don't want to mess around with them without a little advice, right?
It's true. I think that on the one hand, I am usually conservative in my use of medications. If I'm on the fence personally, if I'm on the fence about whether or not to use a medication or whether or not to do a surgical procedure, I usually go with not doing it if I'm on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I've decided that there is an indication for the use of an antibiotic, I use it full strength and I use it until beyond the resolution, you know, at least several days beyond the resolution of all symptoms.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you're leaving the resistant ones still in the population, and they're subclinical, but they're going to come back, and then that antibiotic might not be of value the next time.
All right, let's go to Ernest in East Postenkill, I believe. Ernest, you're on.
John, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 9-year-old Boston Terrier male who's had some skin problems, allergies, and we've had him on several different things. We currently have him on a single-protein salmon dry food and occasional real salmon diet, and he's taking Apoquel. Now, the problem is the Apoquel apparently there's a national shortage.
Yes.
So when I tried to get this online, there was a substitute, and I don't recall the name of the substitute. It also started with an A. So I went and got more of the Apoquel. The problem is that it's not cheap, and my question is, can I alternate half a pill every day or one whole pill every other day? They wouldn't tell me at the vets.
I don't know if I could tell you either, Ernest. Say it again. What were my choices here?
Well, he's currently taking one tablet a day, and our thoughts were, since it's pretty much acquiesced, and my thoughts are, as a maintenance dose, could I cut him back to a half a pill a day or one pill every other day?
I see. So it might be that you could do that, but you know what, Ernest? If it is a food allergy, you're best getting the kind of food that the animal's not allergic to, and then you might not even have to use any medication.
Well, we have tried. We've been very diligent. He doesn't get any grain. He gets no scraps. His mother has no allergies at all. She's a couple years older, and so we've been dealing with this, and, you know, it's not a seasonal thing. He has it year-round,
okay. What you want to do is get an allergy test so you could find out scientifically what the animal's allergic to, and that way you know which ingredients to avoid. It's not necessarily a grain thing. It's something that it might be several things that there's an allergy to, and if you know from either a blood test or an intradermal exactly what the dog's allergic to, you might be able to get at it without having to use the Apoquel. That would be the ideal.
Okay, Ernest, thanks a lot. Okay, tell you what, Doc, let's do one more email here, and then we'll wrap it up. We got about a minute here. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I rescued a blind cat in August of 2014, 1-year-old Spade. She's super smart, friendly, affectionate. I have another 6 cats and feel she should be in a home with 1 or 2 cats. Any suggestions on where to look to find her a new home? She came from a fairly abusive home before me. It's taken me 7 months to calm her down, socialize her, so I'm worried about finding her a different home too soon. Does that make sense? I assume that's the question. I'm not asking that. I assume adjusting psychologically is difficult for her because she's blind. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. You have 28 seconds. Go.
So I have to assume that the blind cat's getting harassed by the other cats. Otherwise, why would the caller be asking about rehoming the cat? So I would wonder.
Well, six cats is a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. Six cats, depending upon how big the house is very much a lot. And there are often frictions between, you know, in these intercat households that have more than two or three cats. So it depends on the size of the place. But there are no-kill shelters. There are rescue groups. There's kitten angels.
Okay.
There's, you know, going online. Just putting out, going to your vet and putting up a sign telling them the situation. I'm sure that there are people that would be have it in their hearts and in their homes to take in a blind cat.
Dr. Ron Scharf, a splendid job, sir. Support comes from Wash & Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying. Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers, May 2nd. Sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. MohonkPreserve.org for registration. And Allard Dice Ace Building Supply, providing lumber and building supplies for commercial and home needs with locations in Malta, Saratoga Springs, and Milton, New York. AllardDice.com. Thanks again to Dr. Ron Scharf of Niskayuna Animal Hospital. Thanks to you for calling and for listening. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, who was at the controls today. Our phones were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh, a lot of fun. Always fun to welcome back meteorologist Jason Goff. We'll talk about this ridiculous cold weather and other things. Stay tuned now for a news update.